Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, not as always, but often enough, is Matt Damon.
I think I've become synonymous with this podcast and getting blitzed all the time, which is sad because I didn't actually go to the blitzed episode.
No, you had to work.
Hey, that was Halloween weekend for the bar industry, and I think my costume at least makes up for the fact that I wasn't here.
Yeah, but it's such a... I mean, I appreciate your costume, but I'm sure that there were so many people who were like, oh, you're the Green Lantern. I'm like, yeah, I'm the Green Lantern. And that's about as far as it went.
Yeah, no, I told people it cost me like $30 at like two different stores.
Well, there's going to be some interesting sound coming from this podcast because I am fighting off a cold yet again in my throat, so I am drinking coffee and brandy. Because that's soothing, and it allows me to talk for an hour. Although you will probably hear me coughing at one point or another. On top of that, there is also an echo. So, because we're refinishing my basement, and I don't want to wake
the
my
studio.
Children up. The studio,
we're
yes.
We're refinishing the studio.
We are refinishing the studio. There will be a certain amount of the podcast that is going to have this weird echo to it. But, you know, hey, it is what it is.
We just wanted to make sure you guys hear our voices double time.
Exactly.
It's that awesome.
It's that epic. All right. So yeah, Nathan is down with a stomach flu. He actually sent me a text earlier this week that says, I would take my hangover from episode 100 over feeling the way that I do right now.
Ooh.
So that was part of the reason why we weren't able to post a podcast yesterday. But the other part of that is so that I could have Matt here, who actually knows enough about Firestorm Armada to be able to talk about the Marauders of the Rift Firestorm Armada campaign guide.
And trust me, the gods tried to conspire against me to not go today.
Oh my god, everybody tried to conspire against us so that we wouldn't
but
be able
made
to
record it
show
here.
Today. We did make it happen. But before we get into our main topic for today's show, which is Firestorm Armada, for all of you people who are just looking for Warhammer 40,000, tune out soon. But let's move on to our model of the week. Our model of the week for this week is the Scimitar Pattern Space Marine Legion Jet Bike Squadron from Forge World, otherwise known as the Flying Phallus Squadron. Well, okay, say what you were going to say about the way that they look. You said they look like locomotives.
Yeah, someone brought up on the Facebook page when they first got posted, they look like locomotives, and I kind of agreed with that. I was thinking more like a 1920s like sports car with the engines like are huge out, and they're like extremely long, and the,
oh,
and the cars
right,
in the back.
Yep.
Like Cruella de Vil's car from
the
like,
big like V16 yeah. Mega Monsters.
Yeah, yeah, like Cruella de Vil's from like the freaking 101.
You're almost there.
Oh, what fucking movie was that?
Dalmatians.
Dalmatians, yes. Dalmatians. That's the only thing I remember from that movie, is that.
Fair enough.
Is that you, jazz car? That's exactly what they look like. Oh, yes. I'm drinking milk and amaretto.
Yes, he's drinking milk and amaretto, and he's going to be drinking dirty, disgusting, differently flavored Hypnotic, which I had a swig of earlier, and as far as I'm concerned, it tastes like berry perfume.
Well, we all know Hypnotic was one of my favorite staples to drink out of the bottle this episode, so I thought bringing a new flavor that I found last
time I was here. I'm sure it'll mix well with the milk.
Well, I was just going to drink it straight.
Go for it.
It was like the Coors Light.
You understand that things that you drink prior to drinking this will still be in your stomach.
Yeah, I know.
So, what do you think? It's pretty gross.
It's not as good as the blue, that's for sure.
But
it's not as bad as Coors Light iced tea.
It is not as bad as Coors Light. I don't think much is worse than Coors Light iced tea.
Anyways, the Scimitar Pattern Space Marine.
Scimitar Pattern Space Marine jet bikes. I said that they looked like the Batmobile from the second Batman movie where he has to like blow the sides off of his Batmobile in order to drive through the skinny alley. That's all I see.
Which hilariously, the old Batmobile does look like Cruella de Vil's car.
Yes,
actually.
Very much so. Well, and again, like I think that that's what it looks like, unfortunately, is it really does look like I get where they were going with it, and I absolutely understand the inspiration, but instead of trying to make them look like cars, they should have made them look like bikes. I think that's the biggest problem with this. They did not need the massively ridiculous front end. Like, it's unnecessary.
Well, I think the front end would be fine if it was that long, if the engine wasn't sticking out, because it looks like an old sports car with, like, the engine sticking out, where it was just like,
well, it's unnecessary. That whole aspect of, you know, building the model that way and having, like, the little bitty engine at the back. Like, we've got the, if we switch to one of the rear pictures here. No, there are no rear pictures. Go fuck yourself, Forge World. Like, I've seen it in other pictures where, like, the back end of it is pretty just kind of underwhelming.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. as far as I haven't, up to this date, I have not heard anybody who's just, like, amped to get their hands on these. So, for the most part, you know, we'll leave it where it
is. I think the most hilarious part about what Legion they're showing is that it's a World Eaters Legion. Mm-hmm. And the World Eaters, like, in any of the Horus Heresy books, I don't think I ever heard them riding jet bikes. Like, it was, like, so I was just like, what is with, I think Forge World has this huge hard-on for just World Eaters and showing them off as the, right. As the Legion. Because, Angron is the first primary model they did. Because yes. the big super heavy tank is also a World Eaters thing, which I'm also right. just like, when did World Eaters have ever fucking used the Talon Blade super tank thing?
Right.
I was like, I'm more used to them just like running.
Right.
Like actually riding in anything. Maybe a Land Raider.
Well, yeah. And I think that that's probably weird too. But really, I don't know. Talking about these models in general, I see what they were trying to do. I don't understand why they decided that they needed to depart so far from what we kind of know and accept as being a jet bike up to this point. Yeah. Like, even the Deathcopters, you're just like, nah, all right, I can see them as jet bikes.
Yeah.
You know, but these, they really do stand out as just being a little bit awkward looking at the table. I think in terms of the rules and the stats, you have the options to take heavy bolters, multi-meltas, and plasma cannons, which is cool-ish, but I don't, I'm never going to see them replacing... that you probably would not see them replacing land speeders.
No,
I think that's the problem for me.
I actually have the Heresy Betrayal book, and I read through them, and their stats were not impressive. Like it was just like they're kind of like
a flying attack bike.
Well, they're Eldar jet bike rules with Space Marine parts, and it's kind of like oh they get to do the extra move stuff like that, blah blah blah. But at the end of the day, they're not as good as land speeders.
Yeah.
Like they get the deep strike and stuff like that. It was just. There's really good stuff in the Betrayal book, and this is definitely not one of them.
Well, unlike Arcfather Pro Turbo, I think that these models definitely could fit in a couple of different armies. Like I think a lot of people are going to look at these and just aesthetically they're going to work for them.
I think people will just use these as bikes.
I think that I wouldn't think that people would actually be doing that.
I actually could see a bunch of people doing it. Like the new Dark Angels book coming out. Like if you take the Raven Commander guy, the Raven Wing Commander guy on the jet bike.
Right.
If you take a command squad model on this, I could see that happening.
That's a stretch for me.
That's not really a stretch because you want the command squad. If you can make a bike command squad with a guy on a jet bike now, why would you not want them to all be on jet bikes too?
Fair enough. But don't you have to order these in the squads of three?
Yeah. So there's going to be one extra guy.
You have an extra guy. Why not?
Who gives a second commander that joins the group.
That's right. So if you ever want to intimidate your opponent by just throwing penises at his face or having an army of flying dildos, get yourself some Scimitar Pattern Space Marine Legion jet bikes. So let's talk a little bit about this week in hobby. I had a game of fantasy against Tom. It was our third game of Lizardmen versus Orcs, and I thoroughly pantsed him.
Are you 3-0 against him?
Well, no. He beat me in the tournament.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Any games we've had in my basement, I've destroyed him.
Home field advantage.
I guess so. But really, when we played last in a tournament, he and I both finished a bottle of scotch during the game.
Oh, that was the scotch game. Okay.
Yes, that was the scotch game for out of the basement. And he did completely destroy me, but I was able to get revenge. So right now I'm up, you know, two wins and one loss against Tom. Other than that, really just reading through the Marauders of the Rift book, kind of planning what I want to do with Firestorm, kind of thinking about how I want to stage my next tournament for Firestorm. Things of that nature, and just kind of continuing to read over the rules for heavy gear and kind of work my way through that and paint up the rest of the models that I have. What about you?
Yeah, I've been doing the heavy gear thing. I built my Northern Guard, and I'm in the middle of building my Black Talons, which is easy because it's like 5 mechs.
Yep.
I showed you them. They're actually coming out really good. I got on the Gear Garage. It's got me pretty excited. I also painted some Emperor's Children. Because the new codex got me excited about Emperor's Children, and then I actually read the rules.
Wow.
and then I actually read the rules, and I highlighted 3 guys, and I was like, I'm done. I put them back away and went back to heavy gear, because I was so unimpressed with the... If I could just play, like... I don't know. I know you guys have talked ad nauseum about this, but...
Well, no,
I built
nothing wrong with it.
I built my Emperor's Children list, and it has all Sonic Blaster guys... The Emperor's Children,
like any good Emperor's Children player does, they built an all Sonic Blaster army.
And with the Emperor's Children shoulder pads, so every one of my models has at least 2/3 metal bits on it that I ordered a long time ago when the 3.5 book was still around. And the 3.5 book was awesome. And that list was actually fun to play. It wasn't that great of a list when I built it in 3.5, but I still was like, yes, this is awesome. This is Emperor's Children. Every codex subsequent to that, like the last one, and now this one is still just not is not motivating me to paint this army.
Well, okay, the nice thing about Emperor's Children is that if you had an Emperor's Children army leading up to now and the current codex, now what you have is just a good Chaos Marine army. Like, that's really all you have, is you're basically going to play your Emperor's Children as Chaos Marines. You're going to take those four heavy weapon guys and throw them off, or proxy them as heavy bolters. Any number of options outside of actually playing them as Emperor's Children. As Noise Marines.
Well, I actually built 36 Noise Marines, though, so I'm painting 36 Noise Marines.
Right,
now. Noise Marines now.
What I'm saying is you will be playing those guys as Marines.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, you're just going to be like, no, they're just Marines with the Mark of Slaanesh. Yay.
With huge bolters that are systematically enabled into their body.
I dare you to play with 36 Noise Marines. You make that army. Don't be a bitch.
I played my last game with that against Aaron against Necrons. How'd that go?
Well, but that was before this codex.
Oh, because this codex is so much better, right?
Yes, okay. All right, fair enough. It went poorly for you then. It will go exceptionally poorly for you now.
Yeah.
All right, I'll agree with that. All right, so... Cheers. Okay.
Cheers.
So basically... Yeah, I mean, I've got my fingers in a lot of stuff right now. Just a lot of different things I'm trying to do. I want to put together a second table. You know, part of me finishing the studio downstairs is that I want to have more tables set up, do more scenery and things of that nature. And I definitely want to get a little bit more... I mean, I already do have a little bit more of a Firestorm Armada board to play on with.
And I'm getting my
two large planets, two small planets, an asteroid.
I got my Dindrenzi ready to go too.
And you were saying you had worked on your Dindrenzi.
Yeah, they're pretty much getting ready to spray paint right now. Once my heavy gear, my last three mechs are done, I'm going to do a whole spray painting day.
Right on.
And then I'm going to paint both of them at the same time.
Yeah, I have to buckle down and decide on a scheme for my Terrans. I mean, that's the only thing stopping me right now is the fact that I have not decided on a scheme yet.
I'm going to test my scheme for my Dindrenzi, because you were there with Kyle and you guys.
Right.
I was talking about it. I'm going to do one test model, and I'm pretty confident it's going to come out because it's the same technique I did with my RSN.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know if I'm going to add a secondary color or just do straight one heavy dry brush blend color across the entire thing and then kind of just like accent the weapons.
Right. Well, I mean, I have a plan for what I'm going to do, but the problem is that I have to change it up for every single model in the army.
Yeah.
I can't actually stick with the theme that I want to do because it'll look one way on the battleship, it'll look a different way on the cruisers, different way on the carriers, things of that nature. But speaking of Firestorm Armada, let's talk a little bit about the Marauders of the Rift Firestorm Armada campaign guide. It is, first off, two-thirds the size of the Firestorm Armada rulebook. It's quite tiny. It is a very little campaign booklet. It does not feel like a rulebook on its own, which I don't mind, to be perfectly honest with you, because I'll be straightforward right out the gates. You can take it or leave it, this book.
Yeah,
if
no,
there
for sure.
are things in this book that catch your attention, like you want to play Corsairs or you want to play Syndicate or something like that, then you'll definitely want to pick this book up.
Yeah.
It is something that you need. But if you're sitting there and you're perfectly happy with your Dindrenzi and you don't feel like you need to do anything else, you do not need this book. There is nothing in here that will be required in any tournament you play in. It's very straightforward.
The one thing I noticed about this book, the first thing I picked it up when I saw it, I was so surprised by it, was it reminded me of the mini rule books from the GW starter guides.
It's slightly bigger, but yes.
Yeah, and that's kind of the feel I got from it too. If you have the main rulebook, you don't need it, obviously, like, because you just want to take this around to travel with it. Yeah, I was actually surprised they went that direction with the mini book.
Yep. All right, so let's talk...
Fully colored, though, helps.
Fully colored, which is nice, and they do actually have more painted models in here, although most of the models aren't painted awesomely well.
And some of them are going straight forward again.
Well, you know what? I thought about that, and we'll skip to that for anybody who's not paying attention to the inside conversation that Matt and I are having. The Orochian Imperium, if you take a look at their ships, everyone was looking at their frigates before thinking that the little nubbin at the back was the engines and they would fly forward toward the little front circular.
The front circular things are the guns.
Yeah.
It's actually the other way around.
But yeah, it's the other way around.
On the
website they had them pointing the wrong way much again. Like the Reloza. But it makes sense because actually if you look at the shape of them and then you look at the cruiser, look at that shape.
No, yeah, okay, I see
right?
what you mean.
Right,
yeah.
And then that's what the guns are. So actually, when you look at it that way, it makes a lot more sense.
I just wish the corporate communication would be a little better on how to do it correctly on the website.
Corporate communication. That's an oxymoron. I'm not going to lie to you right now. Okay, so basically, there's a fair amount of fluff in this book. You get about 8 pages of fluff. It talks about a lot of different things and kind of builds up the various armies that you're going to be able to play, the various fleets. And you do get, I believe it's... six fleets in here, along with patrol fleets and marauder fleets, quote unquote.
Yeah, where it's a bunch of, where it's a conglomerate of everything.
Yeah, you can mix and match however the fuck you want to mix and match. And they basically allow you to mix in your current models as looted ships. So basically, if you're playing a Corsair's army and you're just like, you know what, I have enough points to fit in my Terran carrier, you would be able to take your Terran carrier as a looted vehicle. But it'll say specific to the army how much, what percent of your maximum point value you are allowed to take in looted vehicles.
Yeah.
Or looted ships. So you do have the options to kind of mix and match stuff. There's a couple of standouts here for me that I really, really like. And there's a couple of things that, that really do fall flat for me. But let's talk about the fluff. Okay, so basically, what's happening is in the southern part of the galaxy, in the southern part of the storm zone, between the Cerulean area and the Reloza area, there's an area called the Rift, which essentially is poor planets, don't really have a lot of minerals, a lot of asteroid belts, a lot of, like, it's hard to navigate type areas.
It's the ghetto.
I have to take a drink of coffee because my throat's already starting to rear up on me. So, and basically what's happened is because there's no law in this area, various criminal elements have taken up, you know, refuge within this area.
Okay.
Companies and corporations use the area for remote weapons testing, like Omnidyne and the Directorate.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of other corporations that are basically like organized crime.
The
pirates.
The syndicate.
You know, pirates, the Oroshan who are mercenaries. Like, there's a lot of various, you know, there's a lot of various things in here that kind of mix together to create a very cool idea of having this little microcosm within the galaxy where there's this own little war happening.
Yeah.
Now, they refer to it as the Grey Wars because there's basically no clear good guy and bad guy. It's just people fighting over profit.
It's just a bunch of shitty people fighting
over
their
for the most
area.
Part.
It's like Compton.
And they do, yes. And then they do basically say who's allied with who, but the allegiances are all very, very shaky and it's very, very split up. But basically the idea is that the major power in the area is the Syndicate, who is led by an Aquan.
Yeah,
but it's
a
mix of various alien races.
I read that actually, and I actually found that very interesting that the Syndicate was actually an Aquan. I thought that was actually pretty cool because I pretty much have had no interest in the Aquans since I started this game. Like, their fluff, everything has just been like, well, the Aquans are lame.
Well,
and now there's like an Aquan guy as the Syndicate leader. I was actually kind of like, yes,
it's
kind of
cool just for them to be able to say, like, ah, you know what, like these races aren't just these odd characteristics that the entire race permeates the entire way through. It's like, nah, there are bad Aquans. They're rare, but they're bad out there. And this guy is bored and he wants to have this, you know, Galactic Legion to himself. So basically, the other side of it is Omnidyne. Now, Omnidyne is a subsidiary corporation of Works Raptor. And Works Raptor is, of course, one of the big three corporations that are part of the Directorate.
Yep.
So their whole thing is that when they were creating the pathogen virus, it supposedly failed and they lost all of their funds and they had to get out of that region. So what ended up happening now is they're back 5 years later with a new CEO because he terminated the contract, quote unquote, of the previous CEO, which if you know anything about the Directorate, a termination of contract means they killed you.
Oh, yeah. That makes complete sense.
And so now he's the new CEO of Omnidyne. And he's just merciless in the fact that he is trying to bring this company back up so that it doesn't just get folded into another company.
So it's,
and,
so it's back in the favor? It's back
well,
in the favor of someone else?
They also talk about hostile takeovers. And of course, hostile takeovers are literally
hostile
wars.
Takeovers?
It's not a metaphor. It's they literally will take over and fold all of your technology into their company. I had to take another drink. Man, I'm going to spend a lot of time editing just these pauses out as I'm like slowly huffing for breath and hoping that my voice does not give out on me.
That happens.
Yep. So that's Omnidyne, and there's a lot of other, you know, disparate factions that are built into this, but let's start breaking down the actual rules for these guys. So the Syndicate. The Syndicate.
This is my highlight of the actual book because I was so excited for the Syndicates.
What I like about the Syndicate is they don't have frigates. All they have is a heavy cruiser and a cruiser, and then they have the Syndicate way station, which is in the fluff as being like, you see this tower in the center?
Yeah.
That's where the Aquan dude lives as he goes through.
I read their fluff, and I was actually very, I actually thought it was really cool, and yeah, like the whole way station, I think it's like, has like a nickname and stuff like that. Spendancy Heights.
Where? Serendipity Heights.
Whatever. Spendancy, yeah. Serendipity.
Same. You got it. I got you.
Was actually like, it's like in the middle of like this really remote area, and it's like literally the Death Star just sitting around. Or like, yes. I guess you could think like a Ramley Space Fortress in Gotham.
Well, it's their seat of power.
Yeah.
Right, there aren't a lot of stations like that in the middle of this, you know, low-budget rift in the ghetto.
Well, I think it makes sense because whenever you read something like that in, like, this, in, like, a futuristic thing, you're like, well, how is a guy with that much power build something that big in a huge military organization just going to come and fucking kill it? Right. It's like, well, no, it's getting to there is probably a fucking problem. And then once you get there, it's probably going to be a problem assaulting it. Like, you can't just take a whole force to it.
Right. Well, I mean, they're like the mob. I mean, they essentially control all of these other forces, all of these other fleets. They keep everyone under their boot, you know, like they're enforcers. They basically do the things that they do around the idea of profit. But it's all about like, oh yeah, you need to pay for our protection. You know, like that's what it is. It is very mobster-like in their mentality. Okay, so let's talk about their ships. The way station is what it is. The Phantom class. It isn't a heavy cruiser and a cruiser. It's a heavy cruiser and a battleship.
No, the Phantom battleship is really good. It has turrets, has four guns, it has gun racks. So when they talk about the Syndicate, it's Dindrenzi technology. So that's why you have gun racks and you have the big turrets. It's kind of like the same theory on that. Everything's going out the front.
Well, yeah, this is the first time that we've actually... Yes, but this is the first time that we've actually seen gun racks and turrets work in unison.
Yeah.
Because you either had gun racks or you had turrets. So it's kind of interesting to see.
The turrets is like an Aquan thing, which is an Aquan thing.
No, it's a Terran thing. Aquans don't have any turrets.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought they could shoot everywhere, though.
That's not a turret.
Oh, I thought that was...
Their torpedoes are on all arcs.
Oh, okay.
Or, I'm sorry, any arc. But they have weapons in each arc.
Oh, I thought it was just one weapon going around.
No.
That's how much I've read the Aquans. That's how much I care about the Aquans.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, so I mean, in terms of its loadout, it's pretty tough. It has a decent crit rating. It's not amazing. It has 8 hull points, which is somewhat low. It's relatively
damage rating's
slow.
Low.
But what's really good about it is that their battleship and their cruiser both have some pretty good Mars on top of what would be considered pretty good stats.
It's the Dirty Secrets at Espionage, because RSN has the exact same thing, is a great two-tone thing. Espionage being that you can take a card out of someone's hand. Dirty Secrets being you can have an extra card.
You have the extra card on top of it. What I do find interesting is that, yes, you do get turrets and gun racks on your heavy cruiser, but your heavy cruiser is a squadron size of one.
That's the biggest thing that I noticed, too, is that the heavy cruiser...
I mean, it's a mini battleship. Let's not lie.
Well, but it plays more like... It'll have the same problems as like carriers in the game have. They're only as tough as a heavy cruiser, so they're just going to get picked off really quickly. And once they start taking damage, they're not going to be able to do anything.
Yeah, very much so. But I think for this, when you start talking about the fact that it's about 100 points, I mean, that's not all that crazy. You know, it's not super fast. It's not, you know, particularly amazing in any one aspect, but... You know, damage rating 5, that's pretty standard for heavy cruiser. 6 hull points, pretty standard for heavy cruiser. I mean, I could definitely see people taking 2 of these in a fleet to go along with a battleship, and then supplementing the rest of your fleet with mix and match pieces from the rest of the board.
I think the fleet altogether, the Syndicate, the ships are cool enough to use, and if you use them, you're not going to be going wrong. Shields help too, having shields, especially if you can add these to like a Dindrenzi fleet or a Rathalza fleet or a Director fleet. Being able to have shields on some bigger ships probably helps.
Well, you would use them as looted. Yeah. You're not actually adding these guys. No, like, there's no rules in here for playing. I mean, well, okay, you can play a patrol fleet where you can mix in stuff. What I do find interesting about this is that basically, when you start getting into the fleet builds, it says that any one of these fleets, with the exception of Pathogen, is allowed to take ships from Alliance of Kurok or Xenian League.
Yeah.
You can mix and match however you like, because they're considered to be looted and things of that nature. Yeah, so you do have the option to do a lot of different stuff. All right, so let's move on to Omnidyne here. Omnidyne...
First of all, their ships look really fucking
cool. Oh my god, I love the fact that they took the old Marauder ships and they made them Omnidyne.
No, yeah.
And then they built the Dreadnought and they built the battleship around it. I think they're absolutely gorgeous looking models. I love them when they originally created them. It was just there was no way to use them. They had dumb rules. So now they've actually given them good rules.
The Omnidyne looks really... Like, I think aesthetically...
I will be playing them.
I like the Syndicate personally more, but they're definitely cool looking ships. Like, that Dreadnought looks fucking sick.
Yeah, I think it's very cool. When it comes to the rules for Omnidyne, they are torpedo heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Super, super torpedo heavy. Everything is based around torpedoes. So basically what you have is your dreadnought with torpedoes, your battleship with torpedoes.
And it has torps 10.
Yes.
Anywhere. That's any crazy.
Angle. As well as your gunships and your corvettes have torpedoes. Now, what's interesting about this fleet is you can actually play it in two ways. Because if you look up here at the Omnidyne Dreadnought, it says rearm assault robot torpedoes for 10 points or rearm biohazard weapons for 10 points. So if I play an Omnidyne fleet, and that's my core fleet, and I supplement it with other stuff so that I have enough to actually make it work, which would be like, you know, three Directorate cruisers. What I would be able to do is I would be able to pay 10 points on my Dreadnought, and then every single thing in my fleet that is Omnidyne and has torpedoes gets that mark.
Gets the assault robot one.
Well, if I want the assault robot one or if I want the biohazard weapon one. So, you know, like, I think both of them are very cool. The assault weapon or the assault robot torpedoes are very interesting. They work like normal torpedoes, but they don't do any damage.
No, they're like boarding torps, right?
Essentially, yes.
Yeah, they're like boarding torps from Gothic.
But the way that it works is that I roll to hit is normal.
Yeah.
Exploding dice is normal. You shoot it down with point defense is normal. Use shields and so on and so forth. For every point that I beat your damage rating by, that's how many assault points I then have to instantly do a boarding action to try to take you out. Mm-hmm. So I think that they're very, very cool. I mean, I don't personally see why you would go with... Well, never mind. I take that back.
It's good for... The assault torpedoes are good for stripping down people's... Especially if you play fleets with weak assault and crew points. And being able to, like, bring them down like that. And then board their ships and take them over for extra victory points.
Right, but you have to understand that. In a lot of cases, maybe you're going to beat their damage rating by one.
Yeah.
And you just got one dice to throw at it. And it's not really going to do anything.
Well, but the Dreadnought has torps 10. And torps 10, you can do a lot of damage with. Especially the exploding dice.
For the Dreadnought, yes, but for the rest of the fleet, maybe not so much. Now, of course, their corvettes have Pack Hunter torpedoes, which makes it that much better, considering that you can have a squad of six.
Yeah.
But really, if you ask me, I think that the assault robot torpedoes are the best way to go. I think that they really do work well. I understand if somebody would want to take biohazard weapon because of the fact that it automatically does one crew or assault on top of damage. So if you get a crit... you're still doing damage. The problem with the robot torpedoes, they literally do no damage. So you are banking on the fact that
you're literally destroying people, boarding
ships and destroying them that way as opposed to doing damage. So it's 50-50,
no, sure.
But to be perfectly honest with you, I think if you're smart about the way that you're using your torpedoes, you would want to go with the assault robot torpedoes.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're not 100% sure about what you're going to do with it, or if you're only taking one or two Omnidyne things in a fleet, then what you would do is you would definitely go with the biohazard.
No, I think the assault torpedoes, after reading them too last time I was here, they're interesting. I like them. I think they definitely. I don't think they're a bad gimmick. I think they're a little gimmicky, but I think they're. But as you've proven before, boarding is a good way to get points off the table quickly. And easily without doing as much damage or being able to do it in a quicker fashion.
Right.
You just have to focus on it. So I think an Omnidyne fleet, if you want to do that kind of theme, is actually...
I'll be doing that theme.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they go in with my Directorate. Like, there's really no reason for me to not play Omnidyne, considering that I can play pure Omnidyne and then, like, you know, just throw in three of my cruisers to play with it. Or, you know, I haven't picked up those destroyers because I don't really see where I'm going to fit them in my current fleet. This fleet, I could totally see destroyers going in there and balancing out my gunship costs, right?
No,
because,
again,
gunships, I can only have two models.
Yeah.
Right? Or you must have two. You can't go anywhere else. So I would have to balance that off with two destroyers.
Yeah.
But I could basically take everything, two gunships, two destroyers, and then just, like, have, you know, 1,000, 1,200 points. I mean, considering how fucking expensive this Dreadnought is. 330 points.
Yeah, no.
Like, that's the 60 points more than a standard Dread. Like, that's
the Dread. Their Dread is tough, and it's sick, and it's expensive.
So now we move on to the Rift Traders. The Rift Traders League is basically all of the small business. It's basically an army of hand solos. Like, that's the way that you
like
should look at it.
It's a bunch of small businesses, a bunch of, like,
nobody who's
civilians.
Big enough to have their own, like, criminal organization, but, like, civilians who are just trying to legally cut their own, you know, their own piece of paradise out of the Rift.
The Rift.
Which is,
they're trying to own the gun shop.
I like how the Rift is at the south, so it's like the Storm Zone's vagina.
I was thinking more like the south, like it's like Georgia.
Same
like
thing.
Like the dirty south.
That's why they call it Georgia Peach. You've got some interesting things that you can do with them. You have access
I like the Zeus class battle carrier, because there's not enough battle carriers in the game, period.
I think what's weird about this, and I think what makes me kind of sit there and go, is that they show you some pictures, but none of these pictures actually equate to these models.
Yeah, I don't actually know what the battle carrier looks like.
Well, I'm assuming that that's the battle carrier, but I was under the impression that that was a station.
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure.
But really, it does not seem that the Opportunity class cruiser or the torpedo escorts are actually available models right now.
Yeah.
All they show in the pictures beside it are the gas miner and the two transport cargo carriers. And then one of the old space stations. So, I don't understand what they're doing with this. The rules for these are not good by any stretch of the imagination. They're very middle of the road. You got a lot of overpriced stuff.
I just like the battle carrier because it's called the Zeus battle carrier. Really, that's the only reason why I like it. And there's not enough battle carriers in the game. I want more battle carriers.
Fair enough.
Because the Manta is fucking wicked.
Yeah, fair enough. And again, the battle carrier stats aren't terrible. Well, but
Torps 10 at range band 1 is pretty fucking good.
Well, but that's the problem, right? Like, it's all this is very close range, and it's all very mediocre. And if you look at the escort, it's just fixed forward torpedoes, right? So, like, it's kind of a weird configuration for this army. I'm not particularly fond of it. All right, so let's move on to Supermax 89.
Yes, the prison station.
Or as I refer to it 100 times over, the Australian Death Star. So basically, the story for Supermax is that the Terran Alliance, in their high-minded, futuristic, Federation-like knowledge of the future, have decided that capital punishment and the death sentence are cruel. So they don't kill anybody.
Oh, that's great.
So all of their hardest murderers and psychopaths are basically put on a dreadnought-sized Death Star and sent out to the Rift to basically just die their days as miners in, like, asteroid belts and, like, colonization
planets. Or get hired by the Syndicate.
Well, see, here's the thing, right? What happened specifically with Supermax 89 and that whole fleet is that when they showed up in the Rift, they didn't act like a colonization fleet did. They acted quite strange. So the leader of the Syndicate flew out and had like a little parlay with them and said, right, we're not going to tell the Terrans that you overthrew the wardens of this prison because that's what happened.
Yeah.
So what essentially the prisoners are in control of this particular dreadnought. They said, okay, we're not going to tell the Terrans that this is what's happened, but you have to work for us.
Yeah.
So what's happening now is that the Syndicate is basically paying these guys nothing to be their enforcers.
Which is hilarious.
And they're not happy about it. But they don't have a choice.
No.
So everyone can hear you, like, stirring your drink.
Sorry.
It's hilarious.
It's a good
but
drink.
Basically, that's what they are. So they do essentially work with the Syndicate as their enforcers. Like, they're a terror squad.
I think it's crazy that this is the first fleet that has a singular model as part of it. Like, this is, like, if you're playing this, you're actually playing that dreadnought. It's not just, this is just the dreadnought from this fleet. It's actually, it's like a named character. It's like the first really named character in this game.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Very much so. The Reformer class dreadnought has pretty decent torpedoes on fixed forward. It's got two turrets, and it's also got two beam turrets, which are gravity beams, which you can use to pull ships towards you. Which is hilarious for the fact that this has 12 AP launch tubes and is also regenerative.
Mm-hmm.
Which
and
is
it has
ridiculous.
And four shields. So it's pretty much never taking damage.
It is a beast with 12 wings on top of that. I mean, it really is just a monster. I think anybody showing up with this thing on the table is just, it's going to be a slugfest no matter what you do. I think it's very cool to be able to play that type of character.
Oh, no, it's a hilarious model. It's a hilarious concept, and I like it. I think it's fucking cool. I think building, like, a mission, like, if you were, like, just playing a pickup game with it and build a mission around it, that'd be pretty fun. Like, it'd be pretty fucking wicked.
It would be cool if we could see the support fleet, but they apparently don't have models for it yet.
Apparently, just like most stuff that they're doing. They wrote the rules, right, and they don't really have models for it yet.
Yeah, the destroyer and the frigate are supposed to be the support fleet for this thing that protect it and keep it from harm as they fly out to these various colony worlds to take them over. But we don't have models for them yet. I think it's interesting. Some of them, the destroyers have pretty cool stuff. They've got disruption cannons for torpedoes, which is very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Because they only use torpedoes on the fixed forward. But again, hidden killer, maneuverable, reinforced four, you know, 1 to 2 you can take. I think that these are actually pretty good destroyers. I'm relatively happy with the way that they work. The frigates aren't bad.
Yeah. No, they're...
They also have gravity beams.
You can pull stuff.
Well, I think what's interesting about
I think a lot of the stuff that I'm seeing, and I didn't really make this before, is there are lots of this fleets use torpedoes. Lots of torpedoes.
Well, one of the things that are part of the fluff of this game is that each fleet uses very, very different weapons technology.
Yeah.
Right? Like the Reloza use nanobots that strip apart armor, that are frozen into ice crystals that they shoot at ships over long distances.
Yeah.
You know, the Directorate use plasma turrets. Mm-hmm. You know, the Dendrenzi use rail guns. The Aquans use lasers. Like, it's all very, very specific. But that's high technology.
Yeah.
That's not technology that they share with other fleets. Mm-hmm. So the majority of these fleets, being relatively poor, depend on torpedoes. Because that's the only weapon system you have.
Yeah. And it's pretty easy to build.
In space, right? Yeah, like, that's the default weapon system. So honestly, I think Supermax, besides Omnidyne, I think Omnidyne is the first choice for anybody looking to play this game. I think Omnidyne are probably the best option. But yeah. Supermax comes up a close second for me.
And it's for the coolness factor for him. It's pretty fucking cool.
Oh,
cool
the Dreadnought's stuff. Just dramatic. Like, it's so fucking cool. I absolutely love it. The Oroshan.
Ooh, these guys have been talked about a lot.
They kind of changed their fluff a little bit.
Yeah, they did.
They are mercenaries and, like, they're basically Klingons. Now, like, they're very honorable, their packs and the contracts that they made.
It wasn't like some dead empire that it was before.
But I liked the dead empire.
No, yeah.
I thought they were cool spacefaring races.
I thought the dead empire was a cool thing. I just, I don't know, this is kind of the first little retcon. It wasn't Necron retcon, but it was different. I think this fleet was built, someone built the ships first, and then they did the fluff after, and they're still trying to find their place where it's supposed
to be. Well, okay, I'll stop you right there. That being said, they didn't necessarily go away from the fluff that was there before. I think that they basically added this whole warrior race on top of it, because mm-hmm. they do make a couple comments in the fluff regarding the fact that their home world is a myth, like nobody knows where they came from kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not necessarily going back and saying that they're not extragalactic anymore. I just think that they didn't really talk about it in this book. They talked more about the way that they are in the Rift, which is that they are mercenaries for hire. They're very honorable. They're a warrior race.
Yeah.
Which is very, very interesting, because they still talk about the fact that, like, their homeworld is a myth. It doesn't exist. And that they live on their ships. Their entire civilization lives on ships. On top of that, yes, they did remember to add the turret.
Yeah.
For the Oroshan, so that turret is included in the points cost of the Oroshan
Dreadnought. The Dreadnought is actually really good now. And it's a sick-looking Dreadnought, even though it looks like a Cardassian ship.
I love Cardassian ships, though.
The Cardassian ships in the old Star Trek DS9
was
good.
Those were my favorite, man. Those were my favorite. I really like Cardassians. But anyways, I still want to do an Oroshan fleet. I probably will do it in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they have very unique-looking ships. They're very well-designed. They're very cool-looking. I really, really do like their ships. And, I mean, we've talked about the Oroshan before. Their stats have not changed from where they were before. So they're still just as effective as they were before.
Yeah, and they were tough to play against before. They were never bad. They were never super great. Like, they kind of fit in with the Rathalos with me. Maybe a little more. Like, in the power scale. But
well, I mean, I still really like the Reloza. But really, yes. The Oroshan, I think you're still going to see the same builds that you were seeing before, which is one Dreadnought, a squad of four cruisers, and then just maxed out on frigates.
Yep.
That's still going to be the best thing that you do. I think the bigger the game that you get, the first thing that you would add onto it is another Dreadnought when you have the opportunity,
for sure.
Before you would add another squad of cruisers.
Yeah, the Dreadnoughts are by far the best thing in the fleet, and they look good.
Well, and again, it's not that their cruisers are particularly bad. They do have the Pack Hunter Torpedoes rule, which is really good.
And you take them in squads of four, but they are... How expensive are they? 70... But when you bump from a squad of four to a squad of three, it makes it a little more expensive. Because if you want to take them, you want to take them in squads of four.
Yes,
so you got to find that extra 70 points somewhere.
Very much so. Yeah, I agree with you there. Okay, so the Corsairs. These are very, very interesting, and I actually like Corsairs a lot, and I'll tell you why. What I really like about them is they are the first fleet that really feels like Space Marines. Hear me out.
Yes, okay.
It's the fact that in the fluff, and in the entire story for Corsairs, they're just like, oh yeah, these are just the cheapest warships you can buy. Like, these are just warships that are built out of spare parts and whatever the fuck they can find. And everything that's built on top of this is built around the fact that we've got these Corsair ships. And what really makes them good is the fact that they are packed to the brim with pirates. And they're going to board the shit out of you. They're nimble, they're agile, but they're not particularly tough. But the fact that in the fluff they talk about at least 4 or 5 different Corsair fleets led by a different person. Like, I love the idea that you can paint them up however you want and, like, say, right, this is my Dust Demons Corsair fleet, right? Because there is one of them called the Dust Demons.
Okay.
You know, like, I love the fact that they're actually telling you, go and make your own Corsair fleet, name them. You give your Star Admiral a name. He's a pirate. Like, you really need to do these things.
So you think that sounds like Space Marines and not, like, Captain Jack Sparrow or, like, maybe, like, Eldar Corsairs?
What I'm saying is, like, Space Marines is the fact that, okay, the draw behind Space Marines is not that their rules are super good or anything like that. It's the fact that, or at least it used to be for me, that you could create your own legion.
Okay.
That's why I refer to them as being like Space Marines. The fact, like, that you used to be able to create your own legion.
I was like, because when you're describing this fleet to me, I'm like, it sounds nothing like a Space Marine fleet.
No, it sounds, there's no battle barges. But okay, you do get a battle carrier.
Yes.
Which you love.
Again, I'm always down for battle carriers, man. More battle carriers in the game is better.
And it's a battle carrier with deck crews, which is very, very good.
Fuck yeah, man.
For 150 points, 9 wings, I think that that's a very, very good choice. It has a strength 10 gun on the fixed forward, which is better than the majority of carriers in the game.
Oh, yeah.
It also has 8 hull points. So it is essentially a battleship. Like, and again, they've done a good job of balancing carrier and battle carrier.
No, it's, and again, it's torpedoes tough. It launches stuff, and it's useful. It's not going to go up to, like, head-to-head with most other stuff and win, but with the right fleet around it, it's going to be a good ship.
Well, and that's really what it comes down to, is the fact that there is the right fleet around this thing. The fact that the Brigand-class cruiser, yes, it's relatively soft, but look at that. 10 movement, 4 assault points.
Oh, yeah.
And it's also agile, which means it basically gets the... That's maneuverable. Agile, if I remember correctly, means that you treat it as one smaller,
it gets hit harder.
Well, no. Basically, what means is that if your opponent is attacking it from another large class, large ship,
you need
it counts it. Yeah, well, it counts it as a smaller ship, right? Okay. So, hold on. I'm actually going to go to the MAR for Agile and read it real quick here. This model or flight can ignore the requirement to take maneuvering tests if moving more than half of its modified movement value during any move in an asteroid field. Okay, so I'm completely wrong.
Okay. What does assault blitz do, though?
I think it's small was the one I was thinking of. Okay, so...
But it has assault blitz, which is what you go back to your boarding thing.
Okay, so the agile basically means that these things can ignore difficult terrain if they're moving half their distance, right? So them flying through asteroid fields is easy peasy. They just ignore it.
Well, they live in asteroid fields. They should be able to fucking do that.
Exactly, right? So that makes total sense. But what really makes these things stand out is the fact that they have the assault blitz. Assault blitz means that when your opponent attempts to do their anti-boarding point defense...
Do they reroll the misses?
They reroll their hits.
Oh, okay.
So basically...
Sorry, not misses. That's...
Yeah. So basically what ends up happening is that...
It's like having torpedo spook.
Yeah, very, very similar, right? But it has to reroll all of its successes and accept the new results.
Yeah.
So that's really, really good. Like, that is amazingly good.
Especially when your cruisers have assault point 6, and you can take them in squads of 3. That's 18 dice on an assault if you drop
one. Well, no, you have assault point 4.
Oh, I was looking at the fucking...
Yeah.
12.
Well, 12 is still pretty fucking good. I mean, that's what I use on my cruisers in the Directorate, and I'm playing an assault fleet. On a 60-point model, yes. 5 points cheaper than...
And they move 10.
Yeah. They also have mines. The fact that they also have mines is what really makes them stand out.
I know
out
you're
to me.
Sold on mines.
You're an idiot, though.
I'm just saying.
You're an idiot, though. Mines are great. I just don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Mines are mines.
Sure. Good. Yeah. Hey. Congratulations. You're just a poet. But what's really amazing outside
of Beethoven, motherfucking, haven't you heard about me?
Beethoven was not a poet.
No, but from Epic Rap Battles of History.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. You also get frigates that are taken in squads of 6. that have two assault points apiece, as well as agile and assault blitz, which is very, very good, with movement 12.
Mm-hmm. And their assault points at 6 is 12, again.
Yeah, exactly. Which is great. It's really, really tough. And again, 20 points per model. They're not any more expensive than any other frigate in the game, right? On top of that, you get two different corvettes. You have an assault corvette that has 3 assault points per model
at moves 12
5 max squad, moves 12, and also has assault blitz.
Yeah.
How is your opponent going to be able to stop and deal with your battle carrier
when that's coming,
when all that shit is coming up in his face?
Yeah.
You also get mine corvettes, which have forward weapon batteries and drop strength 4 mines.
And move 14.
Well, I mean, I think that they're relatively cool. You get to take them in squads of 3.
Well, I think being able to move 14 is going to help you get behind people. And when anybody gets fucking behind you, that makes people start getting a little squeamish. So you should be able to fly them around and get into squad quickly.
It allows you to control the battlefield. It allows you to place a lot of mines in a very small area and force your opponent to deal with all of these mines, right? Being able to move 14 means basically you are able to get behind them, yes, but you're able to drop mines directly in their path so that as soon as they fly that first ship up, it's getting hit by 3 strength 4 mines. Like, it is a very, very cool thing to add into the fleet. And again, 20 points per model.
Yeah.
Great
the fleets,
choice.
The Corsair fleet's dynamic, and I think this was obviously the star fleet of the whole book. Like, this was the book was built around this. This is what they want you to play. I guess what it kind of seems
well,
like.
Well, it's the generic fleet, right? Like, and I think that's what really stands out for it. And I think that this fleet, when you start looking at the actual build lists, either gets slightly more looted ships or something like that. I could be wrong. But either way, like, you know, pulling a couple ships out that you like if you don't want to play Terrans, but you like that Mark II Razorthorn, you know what I mean? Like, go ahead and take that thing as a looted ship.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Go crazy. I like the idea that you can pull out these looted ships.
I'm
and the rules
playing...
for looted ships are pretty fucking cool. We'll get to that pretty
soon.
I'm
thinking soon. About playing Syndicate with my RSN, so...
You can do it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I want
to
do.
Here's where we get to a very interesting part of the book. The pathogen.
No. You have to use my coin name for it.
Zerg fleet?
No, species 847 Zerg.
Oh, fuck. Jesus Christ. Hold on.
And I almost added Flood to the end of it, too. Because that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I think what's funny about that joke is that you need to know about StarCraft, Star Trek Voyager, and Halo in order to understand every aspect of that joke. So anyways, pathogen. X9V.
Yeah.
This was a viral agent that Omnidyne was developing. That they used on a couple of Corsair ships that were left over after the Syndicate had blown up their Corsair fleet to keep everyone in line.
Yeah.
So they basically turned on them, blew up their fleet. These guys fled to an asteroid belt. Omnidyne found them, showed up, stripped their shields, and then went in and dropped this pathogen virus onto their ships with these little boarding capsules.
Mm-hmm.
For all intents and purposes, nothing happened. The ships seemed completely unaffected by the virus. The ships did a folding space drive warp out. And then Omnidyne almost crumbled. Its entire company almost fell apart because they'd put so much money into this virus. And it seemed like it was utterly ineffective.
And they just warped away.
So now there's like this nameless dread in the Rift. Where these fleets of what appears to be Reloza and Directorate primarily, but all sorts of different ships, are flying in between blurps of comm static. There's like wailing moans and growls that come over the comm. And what they do is they will then board ships, and this pathogen will like rewrite the ship's dynamic and like steal people. So essentially what this is it is space zombies. These are zombie ships. And each one of them is like a sentient being. And they are mechanical and AI computerized in nature as well as organic. It is not one or the other. They're a fusion of the two. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very interesting in the fact that like the only models that we get for them are the two Reloza models.
Which I find hilarious.
Well, they're on the border of the Reloza space, so it makes sense. But what's very, very cool about this, and I kind of mentioned this in the last show, is that when you look at... the stats and the description of these ships for the infected, It does not say infected Reloza battleship.
No, yeah, it's just infected battleship.
Infected battleship, infected carrier, infected cruiser, infected frigate, infected escort. And they give you the stats for them. You can basically get yourself some green stuff and make an infected fleet out of any ship that's currently available in this range.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think that's fucking amazing.
I think that's the coolest
part
of the
fleet. It's such a smart way to play this fleet. Like, yes, you know what? If you want some models, we'll give you some models. Right? You can model your green stuff off of this.
Or at least give you an example of what the fuck this looks like now.
Right. So, the stats for these ships are about the same cost as what you would normally see.
Mm-hmm.
They're not particularly expensive or inexpensive. But what's very interesting about them is that all of their weapons are range band 1 and 2, with the rare exception being range band 3.
For torpedoes. That's all it looks like is torpedoes.
Typically. Now, what I really like about this is that they have biohazard torpedoes and mines on every ship that has torpedoes and mines.
So they're stripping crew away, and they're assault point heavy.
They're assault point heavy.
And they regenerate.
But this infestation mar...
Oh, that's right, the infestation. Yeah, it's the one where you can, like, take over ships, right?
Yes. So if I board your RSN cruiser and I destroy it, it becomes mine.
Mm-hmm.
It joins the squad that assaulted it, and it regains the regeneration 1.
Yeah.
Regeneration means that at the start of every turn, it's either at the start of the turn or in the end phase. I believe it's in the end phase. In the end phase, you roll a D3, and that's how many assault points you get back.
Yeah.
So captured ships that are captured in this manner by the pathogen cannot shoot any of their weapons. They cannot use point defense. All they can do is move as normal. And they can regenerate assault points up to the max that they would have been able to start with.
Yeah.
So if you did, if you take an Aquan cruiser, you're only going to be able to get 2 assault points max. Mm-hmm. But you are then able to use that cruiser as part of that squadron in order to assault another ship.
Yeah.
So basically, a captured ship that is infected by the pathogen becomes a member of the squad that assaulted it, and then can add its assault points to a further assault later in the next turn.
Yeah.
That's fucking insane.
No, it's good. It's really good.
Oh my god, it's so good.
And you're so much about assault fleets anyway, so yeah, it makes sense for you to be excited about it. I don't play assault heavy fleets, but I see how good that is. Because if you can take models and put them onto your side of the field at any point, that's fucking amazing.
Infected cruisers have 5 assault points apiece.
Yeah, I know. So, and the infected carrier has 6.
Yeah, and again, like, these are relatively...
And the battleship has 10.
These ships are all relatively soft, mm-hmm. right? Like, they aren't particularly sturdy in any way, shape, or form. But with the regenerative and the infected, and the fact that they are decently fast, for the most part...
Yeah.
...means that you can just play a fucking swarm. And, I mean, if you're using the infected frigate with 3 assault points apiece as your mainstay in this fleet... Or even the escorts with 3 assault points apiece.
And adding it to a battleship? Because then your battleship has 10, and if you take like 3...
You can take up to 5 escorts.
Oh, fuck, you can take 5.
5 escorts on a battleship.
That's 15 and 10, that's 25 assault points onto any.
Yes!
That means you're boarding someone's battleship and just being like, you're fucked.
And you're done.
Yeah.
You're done.
Or
and then that battleship...
Even a dreadnought, even though you're cutting it in half, you're still fucking somebody.
And then that battleship becomes part of a squad with your battleship.
Or a dreadnought.
That's fucking insane. No. Like, it's so crazy to sit there and look at this and say, you could escalate the size of your fleet due to the way that you're playing this particular fleet.
No, yeah.
I think it's a very, very cool thing. It is space zombies. I absolutely love it. They are the mindless, we must spread type fleet. I think that they're very, very cool to play. All right, so that is it for the fleets that they've given you in this book. I think every single one of those fleets, with the exception of the Rift Traders... are very interesting. I think that it's all about flavor. You know, if you like a particular fleet, you'll be very eager to play that fleet.
Oh, the Syndicate for sure.
Any of these fleets can mix in with Xenian League and Alliance of Kurok.
Yeah.
They give you the fleet builds here in terms of what you can take for looted.
Yeah.
And then what you can take for the rest of your ship. Omnidyne are allowed to take any regular squadrons from Directorate and add that into their fleet. So playing a pure Omnidyne fleet is as simple as adding Directorate models.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you can't take a Dreadnought.
No.
Everything else, there are a couple of interesting things. What I want to talk about here is the looted models. Did you read this?
Yes.
So the looted models, you are allowed to take advantages and disadvantages to either make the ships cheaper or more expensive according to what you're trying to do with them.
Because you've taken them back to the Rift and refitted them.
Right. Or they're just really old ships that were in disrepair that were sold to the pirates.
Yeah.
At cost.
No, I think it's cool to be able to buy whatever ship you want and then tweak it a little bit.
I think the tweaks.
I think that's a cool idea.
I like the idea of saying, like, well, this is a veteran ship, and we've retrofitted this so that it's better. Or just saying, like, this is just like a fucking... It's been...
This is a relic.
This motherfucker has been in service for 20 years.
This thing is a fucking... We found this thing derelict by a fucking planet. And we fucking refitted
the... Yeah, the torpedoes don't work, but we just figured there's no point in fixing them. Like, I love that idea.
No, it's really cool, actually.
Well, and again, one of the options is your ship just has no torpedoes. Torpedo weapon systems removed. I think that that's amazing. I love the idea that they're basically giving you these options. The other interesting thing about this is the max squadron size of every looted squad is minimized by one to a minimum of one.
Yeah.
So if the max squad size of your Aquans is four, you can only take an Aquan squad size of three.
So that means you're taking, like, Directorate. If you're taking a looted one, like, of, like,
Destroyers, it's one.
Which is, that's cool, because it's
I think not, it's interesting.
It's not making it super good, but there's good and bad things about it, but there's enough tweaking happening
that I
think it's a cool mechanism in the game.
The other interesting thing about this is the only place in the entire game that's going to allow you to mix ships from various fleets in the same squadron.
No, for sure.
So if you take Aquans, one Aquan ship, or like an Aquan heavy cruiser, for instance.
Yeah.
You take one Aquan heavy cruiser. That means that you can have a squad of four. So then you take two Dindrenzi cruisers, and then you supplement that with a Reloza heavy cruiser. And then you would run that squad of... not squad of four, I'm sorry, because the squad would be reduced from four to three.
Yeah.
So you could take an Aquan heavy cruiser and two Dindrenzi cruisers.
Yeah.
And run that as your looted ship squad.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's some very interesting combinations that you can put in here. If you turn to the next page, what you can see is a chart that tells you what the cost of each advantage and disadvantage is for every single ship. Now, not every ship has access to all of the various advantages and disadvantages. And actually,
you can't be taken like, oh, torpedoes don't work on a ship that doesn't have fucking torpedoes.
Right.
It's not like the old Space Marine 4th edition book where you're like, oh, I can't take allies now.
Oh, no.
Oh, fuck. That sucks.
One of your drawbacks is that you're only allowed to take one fast attack choice. Well, I don't take any fast attack
choices.
That's a clear disadvantage. Okay, so advantages. Plus two assault points. You can give elite crew to one looted ship. Double mines. Quick launch and assault blitz.
Uh-huh.
Very, very interesting to be able to give those to various ships.
Quick launch is fucking just an amazing one anyway.
When you take a looted carrier?
Oh,
fuck
yeah.
Fuck yes.
Yeah. Being able to add quick launch to any carrier makes it fucking good.
Yeah. Disadvantages. Minus one attack dice to all primary weapons. Torpedo systems removed. Minus one point defense. Crew reduced by half. Minus one movement. Or minus one damage and critical rating.
It's a derelict.
Very, very interesting.
it's a derelict and we found it. We patched it up. I like that.
I think it's just very cool. Like, and again, they tell you which ships you can take. You're not allowed to take any dreadnoughts as looted stuff. The biggest thing you can take is a battleship. And it's not always the battleship you want. Certain battleships are not available. So you really do have to kind of get your hands on what's available.
But you can take the battle carrier. Booyah.
You can take a looted Manta-class battle carrier, which is... baffling, but why the fuck not?
Awesome.
All right.
Anytime you can take the Manta in another fleet, because I really the only thing I like of the Aquan fleet is the battle carrier, and I don't like any of the aesthetic for anything else. So I'm just like battle carrier. Yes.
Yeah. What's cool about it is the fact that you can use what you already have. If you're like me or you, and you've bought three blister packs of this one guy, so that you can get the squad size that you want, but you've got an extra ship left over.
I have like. 8 RSN cruisers at home right now.
Well, that's not even what I'm getting at. Like, right now, I have 2 extra Directorate cruisers and an extra Directorate heavy cruiser.
So just make a squadron out of that for some fucking pirate fleet?
Because why the fuck not?
Yeah.
And I mean, I could even do that with my current Directorate, but I'll probably end up doing that for Omnidyne.
Yeah.
Just for the fact that it's just like, man, that's all I need.
And you can paint them up in the color of your Omnidyne.
Exactly. So, like, I'm very happy with the fact that they're giving you the option to use ships that are already there. I love the rules that they give you for looted. And I think it's very, very cool. Patrol fleets are basically the 6 major powers venturing into the rift to fight pirates. So we need to wrap the show up. So the only thing I'm going to talk about now is the campaign. The campaign is a complete miss. It utterly fails. It gives you 8 scenarios. There's maybe 1 or 2 scenarios that are actually seem like they might be worth playing. The rest of the scenarios seem pretty weak. And it really does kind of fall apart.
No, yeah, I flipped through the scenarios quickly. I looked at them. There was nothing. It just seemed like, knowing the old Gothic book, how it had 10 scenarios, but only like you only wanted to play.
You only want to play like 2 of them, yeah.
Yeah, it just seemed like a lot of like they're reaching for stuff, they're trying, but it just.
Well, they want you to play a campaign, so they want you to play this escalating campaign. Scenario 1 starts with like a 500 point force. Scenario 8 ends with like a 2400 size point force. And I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to say, hey, you should play scenario 1 to 8, and then that's the campaign.
Well, you should run an event based on this book.
No, you shouldn't.
Well, no, that's what they're trying to say, but you should not.
I agree. but no, really what it comes down to is the fact that they do not give you any rules for sustained fleet resources. And what I mean by that is they don't say, right, if you're playing a campaign and you're playing Omnidyne, here's what you start with. 4 battleships, 12 cruisers, blah, 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 blah. And then you split that into various fleets. And then you now keep track of how many ships you have alive and dead.
See, but that gets into a whole... That gets into the whole debate of...
That's a campaign, though.
No, that's what I'm saying. But how many people have you ever seen that ever... Like, we've talked about that being a good idea for a campaign. Like, I've wanted to run a Galtha campaign like that. People want to run 40K campaigns like that. People want to run any campaign that's like that. But that's a lot of paperwork, and most players don't really want to do that. And at the end of the day...
It's not a lot of paperwork.
But how long are you going to be able to sustain that? And that's a tough thing. That's a tough sell for anybody to do the balance, period.
Well, okay, here's the issue.
I think if you want a campaign like that, it has to be put on the community. I don't think any gaming company has enough time to actually make that themselves.
What the fuck are you talking about? Of course they have. That's their job is to have time to do this shit.
But no one has done it yet.
Okay, but that's... All right, fair enough. But anyways, it's the only thing that they give you for campaign, like ongoing campaign rules.
It's a normal shitty fucking campaign that they copy paste from every other fucking company. That's like, oh, this is the campaign. Make your own rules up for these are the missions. And it's a complete.
Well, no, they give you things to add to your fleet that allow you to have special bonuses. But they only give you about 6 rewards for the entire game. And the rewards are all pretty
meh. It's like the Gothic fucking campaign where it had like all those refits that you didn't ever use.
Yeah, the pointless refits.
Yeah, the pointless refits. It's the same thing. It's what it feels like. And it's disappointing because you were hoping for something really in-depth. Because up until now, Spartan Games have been doing some pretty in-depth stuff and they've been pretty much on point. But yeah, it just seems like they kind of copped out on the whole back campaign section.
The campaign side of it is completely pointless. I was really hoping that I would be able to use some of these scenarios to run tournaments and things of that nature. But even, like, I wouldn't even want to play this campaign. Like, there's really no reason for me to go, like, hey, let's play 8 games.
Just being spoon... Like, when you talk about playing a campaign, I don't want to be spoon-fed how much... I don't want to be spoon-fed telling me, oh, I just take whatever I want and add it on to my next fleet. Or take a wholly different fucking fleet... And bring it to my next
battle.
I want there to be paperwork. I want there to be... No, I picked... This is what I built out of 5,000 points. And then I distributed 5,000 points around a map. And then I played.
Well, you want there to be repercussions for losses. That's what it really comes down to.
For sure.
You know, we talked about this with Firestorm Armada. When we talked about the first and second edition, one of the things that I said was folding space drive deployment and the escape, you know, folding space drive to get off the table... are very, very cool in a campaign where you have to sit there and start looking at your ships going, like, these are not expendable assets. I don't just throw a squad of frigates out and act like they're not worth anything. I need to be able to keep track of how many ships I'm winning and losing by the end of the match. You know, what I'm able to produce, what I'm able to work with.
Yeah.
And those are the things that we want to be able to do in a campaign.
Do you?
But we can't do that because the campaign rules that they gave us are just like, play 8 scenarios.
No, yeah. Do you remember the old... I'm going to go back in time, like, a long time ago, talking about a great... What's the best campaign you ever played at the Kingsway store? Or at least
witnessed? The Pyramid.
The Pyramid. That wasn't a campaign, though.
Oh, you mean, like...
An actual campaign.
Oh, Storm of Chaos.
Okay.
You want me to say something, and it's apparently not coming to my mind, so why don't you just spill it, you dumb shit.
Well, it was... I think it was Kyle who ran it, and it was actually a Battlefield Gothic campaign on a map. And you actually had your own...
Oh, yes.
We had the fleet composition one, and you actually had to actually... submit your fleet beforehand, and you had like different like
if, yeah, once it was your like fleet, it was like Sabbat Crusade once fleet campaign.
Once you had enough ships in your fleet, you could actually split off multiple fleets around the map.
Yes, and that's the idea.
But your list was actually taken. Like your list, your like your disposition of your list was actually to what area, which fleet area was at.
Right.
So people could actually ambush like an area that had yes. like to just distribute your fleets to other places.
Right. And hit and run missions actually made sense.
Yeah. And that was, I think we played that one for 2 months, and that was, fuck, that's like easily 8 years ago now.
It was a good time.
That was a great campaign.
Well, see, that's what I wanted though. That's what yeah. I wanted Firestorm Armada to do and Spartan Games to do, is give us an actual campaign system that we could use.
Like a map based campaign?
No, well, not even map.
In the Rift?
Not even map based. Just give me rules for what ships I'm allowed to keep after a battle wins or loses.
Yeah.
You know, like, how do I salvage what I have?
There's repercussions for my next game.
Something like that. Like,
kind of like Strange Aeons. That's why you like, yes. That's why you like Strange Aeons.
Well, very much so. Strange Aeons is built around a campaign system.
Yeah.
And it works very, very well. But there's nothing like that happening for Firestorm Armada. All right. So, hey, look, something shiny. Heavy gear.
Heavy gear. Definitely heavy gear. I think heavy gear.
You and I got into it at the same time.
Yeah.
You've been slow painting.
I have been slow painting. I've also been fucking very distracted with my brand new job. Like, I had to fight to get this day.
Lang not care.
I know. Anyways, but no, the heavy gear has definitely been ooh shiny for me. I could not even care about painting my Emperor's Children because I had a bunch of unbuilt heavy gear sitting in front of me. So I built it all up, and you were actually really happy with how my Grizzly came out, so that makes me
want to paint it. I think it looks really good.
So the heavy gear has definitely been my distraction right now. Like, my Dendrenzi are sitting there waiting to go. I'm excited to paint them too. But definitely I want to get my itself in a couple games of heavy gear. And
yes.
Some stuff up. It looks fun. I'm excited to paint the models. They're quick and easy to paint.
Yeah.
They're not super big. If you keep their colors to a minimum, and you can paint them fairly easily.
Well, and much nice. Like Firestorm Armada, you're talking about 10 or 12 models.
Yeah,
max.
I did 1,000 points of 10 models.
Max.
Yeah, you already looked at me and you're like, you have enough to play 2,000 points.
Oh, easily, yeah.
That was like, what's up, sweet.
Well, I mean, I really like the game system. I think the game system is very cool. Hopefully I can get Nathan going on it sometime soon here in order for him to actually get into it and us to actually do a full episode on Heavy Gear,
mm-hmm.
talking about the game system and what we're going to do with it. But right now, I think that Firestorm Armada is going very, very well. I think that the Marauders of the Rift campaign book is very, very done.
The Marauders is definitely going to entice me to buy some more models. I think I'm pretty excited.
Yes,
to paint some
it is a success in that regard.
I'm going to paint some Syndicate up for sure. But yeah, the Heavy Gear, I don't know. Heavy Gear has been around a lot. We've known Heavy Gear for a long time.
Well, it's a Canadian.
Yeah, it is a Canadian thing too, which I think
Canadian
was,
company, yeah.
It was funny because one of the side, one of the regiments of renown is called the Rough Riders, and it's actually just a ripoff of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders football team.
Yes, very much so.
And I thought that was hilarious for being a Canadian company, so there was some pride in that for sure. Sorry, Country Stand Company.
Yeah, well, we left that a long time ago. It doesn't really matter. No, I mean, I think that Heavy Gear is very cool. I do want to... One last thing about the Marauders of the Rift book. Like I said before, if there's anything about those models that catch your eye, essentially what this book has given us is one additional fleet that you're able to play. It's a mix of everything. There are only two fleets in the entire book that have legal, pure lists. Three. It's the Orochan have a pure list.
Yeah.
The Omnion do not. They don't have cruisers.
Oh, okay.
The Corsairs have a pure list, and Pathogen have a pure list.
Yes.
So between those three, you actually get three new armies, but what they're essentially giving you is one army, where they're just like, right, Marauders are the pirate army. You can mix and match however you want. If you want to play a Pathogen army, you can't mix and match. You have to use Pathogen models.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they've given us some extra armies, some extra fleets. I think this is very cool. I think the rules are balanced. They're well thought out. They're very interesting. And I look forward to seeing them in upcoming games.
No,
and
I definitely want to see some. I want to play a course. I want to play against a Corsair fleet because I definitely want to see their playstyle.
Jason wants to go to the Corsair fleet.
I know Jason definitely has been talking about Corsair, so I'd definitely like to get Jason in gaming on that against probably my RSN because that's my go-to right now.
Right.
Other than that, no, I'm really excited to get some.
Because you suck with your Eloza.
I do suck.
Because you're all balls with your Eloza.
I fucking cannot figure out the fleet to save my life. But whatever. But the Syndicate, I definitely want to paint up some Syndicate ships. I'm kind of pissed that I can't take three heavy cruisers in a single squadron, but being able to just take one battleship and one heavy cruiser is still kind
of... Ah, but those heavy cruisers put out a lot of firepower.
No, like, yeah.
If I go back to the book and actually do the math here, and I want to flip to the Syndicate because I think it's important to actually specifically say here's why the Syndicate are the way that they are.
Yeah.
The battleship puts out firepower pretty close to that of some dreadnoughts.
Yeah, no.
Which means that, I mean, its firepower is retarded.
No one can go toe-to-toe with any battleship in the game.
Easily. When it comes to the heavy cruiser, even with just one heavy cruiser, 8 turrets with a forward gun rack of 9. So that means you've got a strength 13 weapons battery.
No, oh, yeah.
So it cruisers...
Hold on. It matches the RSN dreadnought battleship.
Well, that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is that one heavy cruiser with weapons battery strength 13 on the 4 is essentially more dice than what I would get with 3 directric cruisers. Because I think 3 directric cruisers have 7 at the primary range band. So that's 7 plus 6 is 13.
Yeah.
So it's the same. So 3 cruisers at 65 points apiece put out the exact same amount of firepower as a 100-point heavy cruiser.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I want to get at, is the idea that, yes, you're only buying one, but that one is doing a squad of cruisers worth of damage.
He's doing some damage. That's good.
So I think that that's very interesting to be able to sit there and go, yeah, well, all I need is a battleship and 2 heavy cruisers, and then I supplement it with whatever the fuck I want to, because I'm the syndicate. You know, everyone works for me, essentially. Yeah. And you just go from there.
Yeah.
So I think it is very cool. But as you can tell, my voice is beginning to crack rather dramatically. And I don't think any amount of coffee and brandy is going to be able to fix that. So that has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Matt.
Have a good one.
Cheers.